Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 20 of season 11 of Movie Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off his three-episode stint, even though it's not in a row, is Chris Henry of the Apollo 13 Minute. Welcome back,
Chris. Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's always fun.
Yes. I mean, I like that you got episodes that work well with you, even if they're not sequential. So that's fine.
Oh no, I love it, and it's kind of funny because it's kind of one of the reasons why it took me a little while to watch Band of Brothers. I'm ashamed to say it. One is I didn't have HBO at the time. But the other thing was when it first came out, I was 20, 21 years old, and it was like, yeah, here's this miniseries about guys on the ground, GIs. And I'm like, yeah, I'll watch it eventually. It was my friend Eric and Megan Konvalenka that said, hey, my dad's got the set. He's willing to let you borrow it. You need to watch this. We cannot believe you have not seen this yet. And I'm like, okay. And I can vividly remember sitting down with my wife and I'm like, let's just watch one episode, and if it's not great, we'll just kind of get through it, And I was like, but boy, they're talking it up. And we watched the first episode and I think we binged the entire series that weekend.
Wow.
It was like a snowy weekend in Pittsburgh and we just watched the entire thing. And it was really funny. I can vividly remember we were during the Battle of the Bulge scenes. We would go up to let our dog out and we'd bring her back in and it had been snowed. We had gotten a pretty serious snow in Pittsburgh. And it just set the tone for what you were watching in the Bulge episode. You're like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. But finding airplane scenes.
Pittsburgh to the Bulge, is that what you're telling me?
yeah, exactly. But putting me in with airplane scenes is funny, but yeah, it was actually one of the reasons why it was a little bit later. I mean, it was on DVD by the time I had ever seen it. And I didn't make that mistake ever again. Masters of the Air and the Pacific, when those came out, I immediately got the services and watched them.
and don't regret that thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that one I didn't doubt for a second.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had Apple TV. It worked out great because I was like, I'll renew my HBO when it comes out. And then it got picked up by Apple. I already had Apple. And I'm like, well, this is perfect. And I did, to be honest, it almost every weekend that a new episode was coming out, me and my friends would get together and we'd have dinner and we'd go to one of our houses and we'd watch it. And I remember the first Friday night where there wasn't a new one. It was over. And we were all just sort of sitting there with this emptiness of like, well, now what? It's all over. And I was like, this is almost like what those guys felt like when the war was over was,
right?
It's all over. We got to go home. What do I do now? I mean, it was, similar feeling, at least, that I thought was interesting.
Oh, well, yeah, I can see that as a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to meet any of the guys from Masters of the Air or most
so,
of them passed on?
The guys that you see on screen were all deceased by the time. I mean, a couple of them died recently, more recently. However, one of the guys that you don't see. However, you do see him in the documentary portion is John Luckadoo, Lucky Luckadoo. And I actually hosted him multiple occasions. He was 100th Bomb Group B-17 pilot. And then I also hosted I got to interview Bob Wolf, who was also one of the original 100th Bomb Group pilots. So I got to interview one, although I don't know if you see Bob Wolf on screen. I don't think you see Lucky depicted. However, you do see him in the documentary. I mean, he's heavily featured in the documentary. And then just last week, I was actually with Michael Faley and Harry Crosby's daughter. They were here visiting our museum.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, that was just last week. I was with them. Wonderful people. Michael Faley was actually one of the technical advisors on the project. So he's also head. He's one of the VPs of the 100th Bomb Group Foundation. And then, of course, you know, Rebecca is Crosby's daughter. And it was interesting talking to her about, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going off topic here. This isn't
Not
about
at all. No, this
Band
is
of Brothers, but it was interesting. I asked her, I'm like, what, you know, what was it like seeing your dad, you know, depicted by somebody else? And she's like, you know, it was, he did a really good job, the actor. She said he did a really wonderful job. But she goes, but it was different. You know, it's like, well, geez, this isn't my dad, but you know what? He did all this stuff. This was him. And of course, if not giving any spoilers away, but Crosby, you know, has a girlfriend over there. And I'm like, how did you feel about that? Because he was married at the time. And she said, you know, he was, I think he was 21 or 22 when he was over there. And pretty sure he wasn't going to survive it, you know. And she said that if, you know, we don't know exactly what kind of relationship it was or anything, but she said, you know, they're kids, you know, what, you know, what, I couldn't imagine trying to do that at 21, 22 years old. And if he had a friend in England, you know, she goes, it was, we did have to deal with that, you know, of like, okay, this happened, you know, would they know that it did happen? And she says, but, you know, we had to deal with it. And he never, out of respect, like, you know, would talk about it after the war or anything like that. I mean, it was just, he didn't say anything about it until years after his wife had passed. And he said, you know, he started opening up about his wartime things. But it was interesting to hear about, you know, when we're talking about these people, both in Band of Brothers or in the Pacific or Masters of the Air, you know, we're talking about these characters under these extreme situations. And at the end of the day, we can never forget that they're teenagers or they're 20, 21 years old. You know, it's amazing how young they are.
Right. There's a line somewhere about the fact that, you know, they're able to go fight for their country, but they can't buy a beer. You know,
yeah.
They can't buy a beer, something like that.
A World War II veteran once told me, the same guys that won World War II are the same guys that you wouldn't want dating your daughter. You know, he goes,
that sounds like Garnier would tell you that.
Yeah, exactly. It may have been him. I don't remember, but I remember that. The same guys that you wouldn't want dating your daughter today are the guys who won World War II. Same type of people.
Interesting. Okay. But you see, I mean, we're obviously staying within the same realm, but whatever. Like, I can imagine Garnier saying that, but I can't imagine Babe Heffron saying that.
So
where do you find the correlation there? Because if they're going to say, you know, that it's the same type of guy, but these two guys who were best friends for, was it 70 years afterwards or whatever?
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
You know, they were, at least from what I've seen, and you know better than I do, they look like, you know, oil and water. They're completely different, but they somehow had this you know, they had the bond of Band of Brothers, even despite the fact that their personalities were so different.
Well, that's exactly it. They were completely different. You know, you're right. That is something that, like, Garnier, and he may have told me that. I can't remember where I heard that, but Garnier, definitely larger than life. You know, how you see him depicted in the show is that's him toned down a little bit. I couldn't imagine what Garnier was like in his 20s. You know, he never got a prosthetic leg. I think he tried one, didn't like it, and then gave it up, and then continued to, like, roof houses and stuff like that on one leg. I mean, just an amazing, amazing guy. But and then you had Babe, who just, you know, a lot softer spoken, but there was just something, you know. And it's so funny. There's a buddy of mine that I'm a more outgoing person. My buddy, one of my best friends, is very quiet. He's very funny, but he's just very quiet. And people are always asking, like, how are you guys best friends? And we've been best friends since kindergarten. And I don't know. It just works. It's like a band that has harmony. Everybody's different, but singing to the same tune, I guess. So, yeah, that's a friendship that just seemed to work. And I'm sure, had they met in passing, on the street, maybe they would have stayed good friends. But I think it was forged in fire,
Right.
and that they survived together, and that was it. Though I can see it where, so I go to a lot of the reunions for the different aircraft we have in our museum. And for example, we have a Huey helicopter from Vietnam. And I go to the unit's reunion who flew our aircraft in Vietnam. And there are guys who are all over the spectrum, whether you're talking about politics or sense of humor or whatever, but they're all brothers. And it's a big family gathering, is what it really is. And I think that's maybe what this is it's family. When we get together with our families around the holidays, we all know that we're different. A lot of interesting conversations around the Christmas dinner table or whatnot, but there's a bond there that's unspoken, and I think that's exactly what exists between Babe and Bill and any others and other units. And I'm sure you can speak to that more than I can, but that's how I sort of see it.
Okay, fair enough. I completely agree with that. Okay. All right, so episode 20 begins with Holland Winters looking for other soldiers and ends with Garnier sneering reluctantly at Winters. So we ended things yesterday with Winters and Hall trying to figure out where they are besides the fact that they are in Normandy. Trying to meet up with somebody or whatever, and as they keep walking, they hear something in the trees, and they take cover. Winters takes out his clicker and starts clicking, and then he hears a click back, and then he goes, "Who's that?" And then three men come out of the brushes, and we see that one of them is Lip, followed by two other guys that we don't know who they are. And Lip goes, "Lieutenant Winters, is that you?" He goes, "Get in here, sit down." Now, I just find it really funny that, here you are in Normandy. There are thousands upon thousands of soldiers that have dropped. And right away, Lip knows that it's winter.
Yeah. I wonder, I wonder what, I know, so I used to work for the airlines, and I'm just throwing this out there, but I used to work for the airlines, and in the wintertime, I mean, we were all geared up to try to keep warm, but yet you could still identify people just by how they were standing or how they wore their uniform and stuff. I wonder if there was some of that in there.
It could be. I mean, again, he's crouching.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
maybe he's used to seeing what Winters looks like when he's crouching. It is
Yeah, I mean,
possible.
that could be.
It is possible.
Yeah.
I love the whole thing with the clickers. I think it's a really smart idea to have the clickers. One click, two clicks, and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really geeked out. I had the chance. So I went to Toccoa. There's a wonderful museum there, right basically at the base of Kurihi. And you
Did
could buy like,
you go up and down Curry?
all right, I'm going to tell you a story
And
that I have not really ever told many people.
now you're
But
telling everyone who's listening. Okay,
I
yes.
know, I know. You guys are getting an inside scoop. So I go to the museum, which, by the way, if you're a Band of Brothers fan, you've got to go to the museum. They actually have the original barracks from the air base that they spent the, you know, they're a pottery air base. Their barracks was moved from England to this museum in Georgia, and it's
Oh, wow.
indoors. It's in the museum. There's artifacts there. It is. Any Band of Brothers fan, I don't know how many people know it's there, but it is wonderful. And so we're there. We go through it. The gift shop has the white shirts with the blue paratroopers insignia on it, so I had to get one of those. And then they say, "Hey, if you want, you're actually free to walk up to Kurihi." And I'm like, well, no. I was like, but I'm
Thank
gonna
you for
walk up a
doing. Thank
little
you.
bit of it, you know. Yeah, so I was like, well, I'll walk up a little bit of it. And they sold in the gift shop these jars that are empty, and on it they have like the 506 insignia. And you buy the jar, you go up Kurhi, and you're supposed to scoop a little sand from Kurhi as a souvenir, you know, that orange red dirt, you know. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do that. So I go maybe about 12 steps up Kurhi, and a giant black snake crosses my path. And you know, usually if you see a snake, it's kind of like, hey, don't really want to mess with you. This snake could care less. It had places to be. It was trucking. And I'm like, I don't do snakes. I'm like, nope, I'm good. And I scooped up my sand right there, or my dirt right there. And I went back, and then you could I had a Jeep, and you could drive to the top of Kurhi, and I drove up Kurhi. So that was it's beautiful. I would not want to run it. It was very interesting. There were actually some reenactors that weekend that were doing it, running it in World War II PT gear and stuff, which was cool. Man, what a workout that would have been. Driving up it was fun. I felt good that I was in a Jeep doing it, so that was like, all right, this feels good. I'm not even brave enough to run up the trail. Like I said, I encountered a black snake and was like, nope, I'm good, and gave up. So that summarizes how well I would have done in World War II, I think.
Okay, did you at least fill up the jar when you got up to the top
I
with
did.
real dirt as opposed to
Yeah,
when you
oh
get
yeah.
to the
Oh
bottom?
yeah. No, I did. I took some from the base and some from the top, and that is probably displayed in my house. Actually, next to I have a signed photo from Dick Winters and a letter. And I just thought about this. Like, maybe the guys would, you know, the folks listening would like to hear this. But when I said it on an earlier episode that, you know, they portrayed him correctly, and I always think of this. He wrote me a thank you note after I had done an interview, and the thank you note ended with, "I hope you have a long, happy, and healthy life." I will never forget that closing of that. I mean, that embodied exactly how he talked and how the actor portrayed him. But to have that sort of written piece is really meaningful. I have both of those in my living room. See them every day.
Wow, that is so cool.
Yeah, they're a special piece for sure.
I can imagine. Imagine it's right next to your model of your Saturn V, right?
I do. I you're It's almost like you've been in my house. I mean, I'm serious. It's yeah, I'm an avid model builder, and of course, you know, Frank was a good friend, and so I have some pretty fun Frank stuff there as well. And yeah.
Yeah, Winters then once again shows what type of leader he is. And he goes, "Get in here, sit down." And then he says to Lip, he goes, "Any weapon?" He goes, "No, sir. As soon as I hit the prop blast, so long, leg bag. All I got is this knife and some TNT. These 82nd boys got their M1s, though." "Oh, man." He goes, "82nd? Where the hell are we?" One of the guys says, "Sir, I saw a sign back there that ways. It said Saint Maria Eglise." Winters goes, "All right, flashlight, raincoat." He goes, "You got a raincoat?" And then one of the guys reaches into the pack of the guy next to him, pulls out a raincoat, and goes, "Yeah." And they give it to him. And again, Winters then hides under the raincoat with the flashlight, looking at a map and a compass to figure out where they are. And just this little, 5 second scene tells us so much about Winter's qualities and abilities. That he's able to try and figure out where they are just on this little information that we're near Saint Mary of Guise. That's it. Let's figure out where we need to go, what we need to do, and stuff like that. And then he comes out of the raincoat and he goes, "We're about 7 kilometers away from our objective, and 4 hours away from when we need to have it secured." "Nope, we got a lot of walking ahead of us." He goes, "You men will stick with us until we find your unit. Let's go." So once again, he's commandeering these two guys from the 82nd, at the same
Yeah.
time.
He's
And yeah.
He's organizing his own army is what he's doing.
More or less. No, I think he's organizing the fact that he has enough bodyguards around him since he only has a knife.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what it comes down to also.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look about it, there's one guy that landed by himself, and now suddenly he's starting to put a small platoon together. I mean, that's what you do. You improvise.
Exactly. Definitely. And they start walking together. And then one of the guys says to Lip, "Hey, Sarge, where are we going?" He goes, "Causeway number 2, Utah Beach. The Germans flooded the fields inland. We don't clear those routes, our boys ain't getting nowhere." He goes, "Five of us won't secure a road." And then he goes, "That Louis don't even have a weapon." Funny that he refers to the, you know, him as a lieutenant, that he's a Louis. And then they keep walking, and then the shot changes, and we get a shot of a few other soldiers, and we can recognize Malarkey and Garnier there. And then one of them says, "I don't remember hearing about any railroads near our objective." The other one goes, "I'm telling you, this is the spur line parallel to the river. We should be coming up to the road and bridge ahead." "Yeah, how would you know?" "Because I studied sandtails." "Oh, you can train," or "shh." And then they hear someone coming, and they go, "Flash, thunder." And then they go, "Lieutenant, is that you?" He goes, "Malarkey?" He goes, "Sir." So once again, everyone's able to recognize Winters. You know, he wouldn't be good as a spy. You know, everyone knows who Winters is. You know, Winters is the norm of Band of Brothers. You know,
yes, he is. He absolutely is.
You know, no question about that.
Well, and I think it tells that there's a couple things going on there. One, and I'm sure you've already talked about it, but the training that the actors did to get to play these roles, I think comes through in moments like this, where I actually think, I have no doubt, of course, this was a script, but I think that conversation came across very believable, simply because I think by this time they had been, you know, they've been instructed not to call each other by their real names. They're using their character names. I think the conversations just show up on film way better because they did that. And mm-hmm. I think this is a great example of that. This is a tribute to that training they did, where, you know, they really, I always liked what Dale Dye said. They had to earn themselves the right to call themselves Easy Company for this. And there's a lot of productions that would not have gone as far as this one did. And that's you know, thanks to people like Tom Hanks that said it, you know, if we're going to do it, we got to do it right.
Right.
So that you could understand that, you know, I think you lived with these guys day in, day out. You probably could tell by the way someone was standing there on and it silhouetted that, oh, that's Malarkey, you know, or something like that. I totally get that. Man, that really just shows up great in this.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, again, earlier this week, you know, I had my interview with Freddie Joe Farnsworth, who's one of Dale Dye's main guys for Band of Brothers. And he talked all about that. I mean, it was great.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to hear that one.
Yeah. Yeah. He, that was a great conversation about what they do to train these guys. And, you know, Dale Dye had set up a regimen for decades that has been used, you know, in training actors to look and act and feel like soldiers, you know, so that when we're watching them on screen, we feel that it's believable. So it's great.
Well, they did fantastic with this.
Yeah, completely. And then we get a little bit of banter between the soldiers, and he goes, "Glad to see you. Hey, fellas, everyone okay? Good to see you. Nice to see you guys too. Keep moving." And Winters goes over to Garnier and goes, "Garnier, sir, you and Hall up front." He goes, "Who the hell is Hall?" And we see them continue to walk, you know, and they're walking along the train tracks. You know, like, reminds me of Stand By Me. You know,
yes.
Following the train tracks where they need to go. You know, but nobody's bending down to make sure that there's no vibrations in the you know, on the tracks themselves, though.
Wow. I just watched that yesterday, by the way. So that was a really interesting callback. Yeah.
Then we hear horses in the distance getting closer, and Winters realizes something's going on, and he immediately springs into action, and tells Lipton, "Go over there, Garnier." And then he goes, "Wait for my command." And they all get in position, ready to shoot, waiting for whoever it is that's going to be showing up. Garnier just opens up a lot earlier than everyone else before he gets the command to start shooting. And you can see the look on Garnier's face that he's getting a lot of pleasure out of this, which, again, is understandable based on what Garnier must have been going through psychologically at that point, having just found out that his brother had been killed 2 months earlier in Italy.
So I can tell you from personal interactions with him, he had absolutely zero regrets with anything he did during World War II. And I'll tell you a funny story. We were at the Reading Air Show, and big reenactor turnout, you know, and they encourage everybody to, you know, do whatever and, you know, dress appropriately. And, you know, there's civilians and there's Red Cross girls and there's GIs. And of course, there's some people that chose to represent the German side. And I'll never forget, I was standing there, and Bill Garnier, I was standing between him and Babe Heffron, and Bill just looks at me and Babe, and he goes, "What kind of a guy wants to come to an event like this dressed as the loser?" And you know, and I just kind of chuckled, and he looks over at Babe, he looks over at me, and he goes, "Hey, Babe." And he pointed back at that guy. He goes, "On D-Day, I killed a guy that looked just like him." I'll never forget that. But, you know, and Babe's like, "Okay, Garnier," you know, and you're just like, oh my gosh. I mean, he was good with it. And let's not forget that, you know, a lot of the people that he took down, he was taking them down, like you said, as revenge for his brother. I mean, that was, you know, imagine finding out someone you were really close to, you know, was killed at the hands of this enemy that was doing some pretty brutal things. And then, what, a day later, they hand you a weapon and they say, "And have at it," you know, and you're in your 20s. You know, I mean, you're probably going to feel very similar to what he did. And but that still cracks me up after all these years. Just that was probably in like 2010. When he did that, but I'll never forget that. I killed a guy that looked just like him on D-Day.
But you see, I gotta say, based on what I know about Garnier, you're probably cleaning up his language a little bit.
Yes, yeah. I'm making that as clean as I can.
Yes, from anyone I've spoken to who knows the real Garnier, he had a very colorful vocabulary.
Yes, he did.
About everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Oh, wow. That is a great story. And then Winters reprimands Garnier and says, "That's enough, Garnier."
Yeah.
Because Garnier just keeps shooting after everyone else has already stopped. And you see that all of the Germans are dead. And then Winters goes, "Everyone okay?" And then we get a collective, "Yes, sir." And then Winters looks over at Garnier and goes, "Next time I say wait for my command, you wait for my command, Sergeant." He goes, "Yes, sir." And then we see one of the horses is suffering. And Joe Toy just puts it out of his misery. And we get a quick gunshot of that whole thing. And then Lipton runs over to Winters and goes, "Here you go, Lieutenant." And he gives him a gun, and he goes, "Crap weapon." So, I mean, what this also says is that Lip is also going to be using a German weapon. Because he also said he didn't have a weapon. All he had was the TNT. So, you know, or a knife and TNT. And then Garnier looks over at Winters as he walks away and goes, "Fine, Quaker." You know, which next week we'll talk a little bit more about the perception or misconception of the idea of Winters being a Quaker, being a pacifist, and all that stuff. So, is there anything else you wanted to add about this particular segment or about Band of Brothers in general or more Garnier
No, I think this is good. I like that. I like that. I have Garnier stories that I cannot tell on to the public, but like you said, cleaning up his language. But
You can. I'll just beep whatever words
I
yeah,
don't
that's fine.
even know how I would tell this one. Let's just say that you know what? I do have one that I could tell that's not bad, and it's really funny, and we'll end it with, I'll end my talking with this. Is Bill? I had two friends of mine that were going to go film a documentary with Bill. I had set them up to go out and do the interview, and they were at the time dating before they were engaged. A very lovely couple. They're now married, and Kara is this very, very just very fun, outgoing, and she's very pretty. Young lady, and I had told Adam, her significant other, do not let her get too close to Bill because she will end up on Bill's lap. And they kind of laughed it off, and I'm like, I'm being serious. And I remember they had an appointment to meet with Bill, I think at like 1 o'clock. And I get a text from Adam at like 1:10, and it's just a picture of Kara sitting on Bill's lap. And I'm like, he was like, "You weren't kidding." I was just like, "Nope, that Bill got her." There's a great picture of her sitting on his lap, though. And he was a great guy, but that was just hilarious. And very Bill. I mean, he's larger than life. I mean, he really was. Really, really fun guy, and Band of Brothers depicted him as funny. I mean, he's sometimes the comic relief, but he's very serious because he's at a serious time in his life. And being a Pennsylvania kid, I know Bill Garnier's. I mean, I know people that are just like him who sound just like him. I grew up with these guys, for me, it was a little taste of home when I was watching Band of Brothers, where I'm like, all right, there's somebody representing people, Italians from Pennsylvania. Like, this is my jam right here. I know these guys, related to some of them. I think that's why I was always drawn to Bill, is his reactions were the reactions that myself and a lot of my friends would have had to these situations. So it really made sense to me where, that's just kind of how this part of our country would have reacted to being told, that a Quaker was going to lead you into combat. I could totally see some of my friends' reactions. So, it resonated with me, and I think that's why I was so eager to meet Bill in person. And I'm really glad I did. Bill is a wonderful human being, but he is definitely a ball of fire. That was for sure.
Wow, that's great. All right, so today's segment is called "Oh Brother," where my guests will give their top five movie brothers. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, my number five is, I'm going to go with the Brothers on Backdraft, the firefighting movie. Love that firefighting movie. It's Alec Baldwin. It's Alec Baldwin and
And Kurt
or no,
Russell.
I'm sorry, not Alec Baldwin. It's the other Baldwin brother.
Billy Baldwin, isn't it?
Yeah, and then Kurt Russell. And great movie. I worked on air ambulance, but I was with a lot of firefighters, and that movie, there's a lot of cheese in that movie, but the core, the core feeling of that movie is very true, that that's a brotherhood there, and it really is. I've never experienced that brotherhood more than I did working around the firefighters and police officers as part of an EMS. So that's my number five.
Right.
Working my way back up, I'm gonna go The Erps and Tombstone. Love the movie Tombstone. I'm actually going to Tombstone in April to go and see The Real Place. But great movie. Jeez, that's another Kurt Russell, actually. Right? Yeah. Kurt Russell and Sam Elliott and, geez, the guy who played Fred Hayes on Apollo 13.
Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton, yeah. So that's my number four. My number three, I got to go to the Corleones. My Italian family, I would be disappointed if I didn't represent the Godfather somewhere in my episodes here. Michael and Sonny, I got to put them in there. I love off-color comedy, so I have to put Dale and Brennan from Step Brothers, even though they're Step Brothers.
It
Love
counts,
that
it counts,
movie.
it counts.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies. It's absolutely hilarious flick, and it's not one you have to spend a lot of brain power on, but I enjoy it. And my number one is, and I'm sure other people are going to have this, is the Blues Brothers. Absolutely love that movie. I quote it probably almost every other day. Yeah, one of my favorites.
That is a great list. Thank you very much for that, Chris.
Absolutely.
And now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
Oh
So
boy. All right.
how you doing on this one again? So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, what 2004 movie was about the final days of Hitler?
Oh, is that Valkyrie?
No, that was first of all,
No.
that Valkyrie was 2008.
Okay. You
That
got
was
me. I don't, I'm not sure.
the attempt. That was the attempt to be the final days of Hitler. This is a German language
Yeah.
movie.
Oh, geez. I think you got me. I don't know this one.
It's called the Downfall.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't know that one.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a not an easy watch, but it's good.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I gotta check that out. Another one of my movie list to watch.
I have a feeling you're not gonna have any time for festivities because you're gonna be too busy.
Watching
Yeah.
power watching World War II movies.
That's right. All right. So, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Chris Henry?
Absolutely. So I've been very honored to get to be on a few of the different Movie by Minutes. I got to co-host with Jim O'Kane on the Apollo 13 minute, and then I've gotten to spend some great quality time with this character here doing the Die Hard minute. Let's see, we did of course this minute, the Saving Private Ryan minute. Did we do another one?
No, those are the only two that we did so far. This is the third
Okay.
one, the Band of
Third
Brothers.
one, yeah,
That's the
this is the
third
third
one.
one. Yeah, Band of Brothers. And then I'd also done the Close Encounters minute as well. So those are the minutes that I think I've been on the Airport minute and the Rocketeer minute. I'm somewhat newer to the minutes. I've only ever hosted the one with Jim on the Apollo 13 one, and absolutely loved it. I always have a good time coming here and chatting, and I always thank you for having me on. You make it easy to hang out and just tell stories about airplanes and get to interview veterans.
Exactly. All right. So, Chris, thank you very much for joining me once again. So, finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Ramen. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, find me on my website, movieramen.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieramen@movieramen.net. So, everyone, have a great weekend, and I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, curry!
Hooray!